Joining me now is Carl Ratner, professor of voice at Western Michigan University. Good morning, Carl.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Concerts are coming fast and furious at the School of Music these days. There's a 100th anniversary to celebrate, and the university's Dalton Center Recital Hall is just booming with music day in and day out.
It's amazing, and so many major concerts with a lot of participants and that sort of thing.
Well, that's why we're here today, is to make sure one concert this week doesn't go unnoticed. It's an important concert for a number of reasons, but first one that comes to my mind is two world premieres.
Yeah, can you imagine two fantastic pieces, both very involved compositions, and I think they're going to be very exciting.
Well, you're involved with one of them. It's a premiere of a song cycle based on poetry of Langston Hughes. And would you tell me about your relationship to its composer?
Robert Patterson and I went to junior high school and college together. In fact, we went up to Oberlin, where we went to school, to look at the place at the same time. And at least I fell in love with it, and apparently he did enough to go there. And so so we were both at the Oberlin Conservatory at the same time. He was a French horn major and composer. We were both, one thing that sort of ties in is that we were both sort of both math nerds and music nerds in high school and experimented with composition, and he was a horn player. I was not much of a pianist, but at least I could use the piano to tinker out my tunes. And so we both ended up at Oberlin, and we both maintain all of these similar interests, and he does work with computers and music, electronic music, and computer programs for musicians, and so forth. So it's all tied together for him, whereas I can barely balance my checkbook anymore.
I think I'm more like you than like Mr. Patterson. One thing that I read in his biography, he concentrated as a horn soloist at first, and composing came a bit later, the new focus and the computer focus also mixed in there. And you as well, Carl, have a strong theater background and a directing background. Voice came a bit later.
That's true. Yeah, I really, there are those who say that I showed little talent for singing until my 30s when I just started doing it. And then I didn't start studying voice until very late, until I was almost 39 years old. And so, yeah, it was a late career change, but it seemed to go well. Maybe my voice just needed a little more time to mature.
Well, and your musical sensibility was maturing all along. So.
That's what's helped me through many challenges, is that at least I was always very involved in music and what great music was, and grew up in a musical family. My uncle is a professional pianist who taught at the Manus College of Music. So
was it Robert's idea to use the poetry of Langston Hughes?
Yes. I was in Memphis performing my Russian recital down there, my Russian-American recital, which also involves some Gershwin, Copland, and, you know, some American composers. And Robert's wife was very much involved in presenting that concert down there at the Beethoven Club, which she manages. So I saw a concert the night before of Robert's music, a song cycle that he wrote for soprano, and I said, well, haven't you written anything for baritone? And he said, no, but I have these Langston Hughes poems that are just yearning to breathe free, and, you know, maybe I can put something together. So I sent Robert some recordings of mine, so that he could have my voice in his ear as he wrote the pieces, and he wrote them very much for my voice.
What are some of the other pieces and works that Robert Patterson has written over the years? What are some things on his...
Well, I think, of course, because he's a horn player, I have a whole CD of horn recordings on which he wrote the music and performs. So possibly that might be a very important contribution that he's made to the literature for horn players. But he's written a lot of of orchestral works, and I would say he's probably lesser known for the vocal works, but if these songs are any indication, he should be more known for his vocal works because they're really fantastic pieces.
When I think of Langston Hughes, I do think of the Jazz Age in Harlem.
Right.
Knowing there was, the music scene there was amazing at the time. And so if I were going to guess what they were going to sound like, they would sound kind of jazzy.
Well, it's interesting because they fuse so many different kinds of influences. And but yes, there's a, I would say, you know, there's 12 songs and probably about half of them jazz plays a significant part, or some kind of popular music, boogie-woogie or honky-tonk piano or jazz. It runs through. And then there are others that are just purely lyrical outpourings, and some that are extremely modern. There's one song, the poetry ranges also from love poetry to some very politically conscious poems, including one incredibly eerie poem about lynching that Robert has set in an incredibly eerie way, in which I sing in falsetto and chest voice and stuff in between. And so that piece is very unusual sounding, and just a sound world of its own. You can't even really describe it. But the wonderful thing is the variety that the jazz idiom is always coming back, and so you always find things that you can latch on to, and then the other things are in the context of that.
If you've just joined us, my guest is baritone Carl Ratner, who's premiering this new set of songs, music of Robert Patterson and lyrics of Langston Hughes. The concert is this Thursday at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. School of Music website is wmish.edu/music. Why don't we take a moment here to listen to a piece of Robert Patterson's, who's it's written for a different ensemble, but it's a good example of what he can do.
Yes, we're going to hear the last two of his five medieval pieces, and the unusual ensemble is violin, saxophones, horn, and synthesizer. And you'll hear, just as he sort of, as the jazz idiom goes through the song cycle we're going to do here, you'll definitely hear the medieval flavor of these songs, but you'll also hear electronic sounds. It's an incredible fusion of things that you wouldn't put together, but they all sound great together when he throws them together.
Clever, inventive, witty music from your friend Robert Patterson.
Yes, well, he's all of those things, clever, inventive, and witty. And each of his works has very much a different sound that comes out of whatever the specific intention is of that piece. But there are several things, you know, that go through the rhythmic inventiveness for sure, and just the vitality of it, and the melodic quality. Certainly these songs are very melodic.
That's true. He's writing in a tonal world, and clearly with that piece, the medieval qualities were coming through as well. If you've just tuned in during this music, I'm speaking to baritone Carl Ratner, who is premiering a song cycle of Robert Patterson's this Thursday at 7:30 p.m. With another world premiere on the program from the music ensemble, the new music ensemble at Western Birds on a Wire, and that will be led by David Colson, the director of music at WMU. Your accompanist is...
We cannot call him my accompanist. We must call him... Even pianist is too humble a word. He is a fantastic partner in music. And of course, he's such an incredible musician that he's really helped me tremendously in absorbing these pieces, which are as new to me as they are to him. And they're very difficult. The piano parts are fiendishly difficult. I must say that the voice parts, Robert has taken great care to write things that poor singers can comprehend. The problem being that the accompaniments are so difficult and complicated that it's hard for me to, because at any given moment they might be in another meter, even though it's all written in a way that you can see it, but he might be playing in 2-4, I might be singing in 5-8. And so so things throw me off, and Raymond has given me all kinds of assistance in how to hold the whole thing together.
Well, of course, I should say we're talking about Raymond Harvey, the conductor of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra.
Right, and I'm so honored that he was willing to perform these pieces with me.
It must be a wonderful, I mean, he's busy enough. He just gave a wonderful concert, The World of Respighi, and he's preparing a concert for the 15th and 16th at Chenery Auditorium. And it must be kind of a crazy kind of diversion, you know. You've got your main thing to do, but then to be able to premiere new music must be a tasty treat you can't quite resist.
And I have to say that each of these 12 songs has its own little musical world. And I'm even though they're short and difficult for him, each one of them offers a different kind of gem for him to enjoy in a small canvas.
I think if he were here, he might tell us. I know that choral music, vocal music was very dear to his heart.
Absolutely.
As a young musician, and it's what got him started. So might have jumped at a chance to perform with a singer.
Possibly. And of course, I've appeared in several operatic productions with the Kalamazoo Symphony that he's conducted. So we've worked together on vocal things before, but in an entirely different way.
Well, listeners may have already seen Maestro Harvey at the piano on a couple of occasions with the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra and with chamber music presented by the KSO, but this is a really special opportunity to see him collaborating with you singing.
It's a fantastic experience.
The work is called American Pierrot, and
yes,
something that needs some explanation.
Well, you would be surprised at some of the themes that go through Langston Hughes's work, since you think of them as things that reflect the African-American experience, and where does Commedia dell'arte come into that? But he really, he's really a bridge, I think, across communities. And of course, on the one hand, he was trying to express very much the real speech and life of the African-American community. On the other hand, he was definitely, as I say, sort of a bridge to the white intellectual community, and had a lot of international connections to intellectuals in Europe and so forth. And so you can't be surprised when some odd reference comes in, and it always has a little bit of a funny color to it. But in this case, he is likening himself to Pierrot, and Pierrot is sort of the melancholy figure.
Is he the clown costume?
And he's in love with Columbine, but she often, sometimes they end up together, sometimes she goes off with someone else and he's left in the moon. And this was a wonderful link for Robert between Langston Hughes and the Pierrot Lunaire, the Schoenberg cycle, based on interesting poetry. And there's a lot of imagery that goes between. I should also mention that Bach gets mentioned frequently in Langston Hughes poems, and there's a musical reference to Bach in here. There's a Stravinsky reference that Robert has thrown in, not coming from the poetry, but coming from the sound of the poetry. And so Langston Hughes wrote so much poetry, and I was kind of astonished to see this gigantic volume of his poetry, and there's just so much in it as you go through, and so many different kinds of metaphors.
American Pierrot, a Langston Hughes songbook. How many songs are there?
There are 12 songs. The whole cycle lasts just over about 24 minutes, so they average about 2 minutes per song. So some are a little bit longer, mainly because they are more lyrical, you know, slower songs, rather than that the poems are long. In fact, one of the longest poems, Life is Fine, that's a very upbeat, fast kind of song, so it goes by very quickly.
Well, let's introduce the sample that you brought. This is a new way of working long distance with your collaborator.
I just wept tears of thanks when Robert emailed me some MIDI tracks, which were synthesized versions of the pieces with a cello playing the vocal line, which really helped me to learn it and see how my vocal lines, which, as I say, are very accessible, but how they fit into the complicated piano parts. And I also had John Griffin, who's a wonderful musician and composer himself, helping me put these songs together. At any rate, this song is called, or the poem is called, Dream Boogie Variation. And it's kind of a metaphor between a honky-tonk piano and a train. In this case, the Freedom Train is mentioned in the poem. I'll read the poem real quickly, if you don't mind. Tinkling treble, rolling bass, high noon teeth and a midnight face, great long fingers on great big hands, screaming pedals where his 12-shoe lands. Looks like his eyes are teasing pain, a few minutes late for the Freedom Train. And you hear in this song, it begins with a honky-tonk piano, and gradually you understand it as an overlay with the sounds of a train, which are really uncannily set. You just have to hear it. And I'll give you some hints cues, on the way, some cues of what's going on.
Before I press play, another word of explanation about how composers work these days. From what I understand, a lot of them do start writing right into their computers, and they can hear back what they've written in the correct pitches and tone and frequency and durations. And so that's how these tracks are generated.
And I'm sure that, as you say, that was very much a part of the process of creating the songs and getting the feedback back. And there's some things in here that really only a computer could have helped Robert visualize, because there's a lot of things with many sort of, you know, seven notes to the half note or things like that that are a little bit harder to put together in your brain, but the computer has no problem with that whatsoever, so it becomes easier to conceive.
And so we hear piano and then a computer-generated cello representing your vocal line.
Right.
Let's listen.
So you're hearing the honky-tonk piano. That was the first sound of the train getting ready to roll. Here's the whistle. All aboard.
I can hear it coming.
Isn't that amazing? It's just eerie. And, you know, when you see it on the page, it looks kind of innocuous. But it is difficult because of the at a certain point, all of that cello rondo is written into the music, and then suddenly it just says a cello rondo, and just fitting the voice part exactly into that back and forth is a challenge.
Yeah, your line doesn't have a lot to do with the rhythm that's beneath that the pianist is bringing out.
Right, it's just sort of floats on top of it as much of it does.
And now, thank you for reading the poem, because now I realize why that train sounded quite so very ominous.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Freedom train. And of course, in concert, in person, with you singing and Raymond Harvey at the piano, it'll all come together.
I certainly hope so. We always hope so.
Tell me about working with Raymond on these pieces. How have you been getting together for a little while?
Yes, we have been working together on them for about a month, a little over a month. We sort of put them together separately on our own and then came together. But first I suggested the first week we do the easy songs, the second week we do the hard songs, the third week we do the hard songs again, and gradually we put them all together and started stringing them together at first pairs and then groups. The cycle is really divided into three mini cycles. Piero's Passion, Piero's Estate, which has more of the political songs, and then Piero's Heart. And those were the last three songs were actually the first to be written, and I just immediately fell in love with that little mini cycle of three songs. But all three parts are very interesting, stunning music, and great to sing.
Really? Weren't there any that you were just like, ugh, I don't like this. Robert, can you redo this?
Well, Silhouette, which is the lynching song with all the falsetto in it, it's also, the accompaniment is very atonal, and I just feared that I would never be able to, because what you don't realize is that when you shift registers, there's also an instinctive, falsetto is naturally a little sharper than your chest voice. Chest voice tends to bring the pitch down, and you're always having to adjust for that. Well, when you're constantly shifting between registers like that, women are much more used to it than men, it can create a real challenge. And then if you're in an atonal landscape, trying to get your pitch in that whole technical shifting thing, I just wondered if I was ever going to get there. But I think I'm pretty close now, thank goodness.
Can you write this on a diatonic scale, please? Oh, I'm sure you're glad you took it on, though.
Absolutely. Yeah, now I think Raymond would agree that basically every song makes its case. There isn't a song in there that I would say, well, let's take that one out.
The concert, again, is this Thursday, just 2 days away. It's at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. It features this song cycle of American Pierrot, was it?
Yes.
American Pierrot, a Langston Hughes songbook, and the world premiere of a work by Western Michigan University composer Christopher Biggs.
Yes, and I think that's also going to be a fascinating piece. It's a big multimedia extravaganza, with the participation of collaborators in a lot of different disciplines, including David Kerwin, who's a dance professor, so I can't wait to see exactly how he fits into things. And it has to do with biodiversity, and is that the name of the piece?
It's called Biodiversity, and it says here featuring live and pre-recorded electronics, as well as videos created by four multimedia artist collaborators, including WMU's Kevin Abbott, choreography by Professor of Dance David Kerwin, like you said.
Yeah.
A piece that needs to be seen to be heard.
I think so. And they tell me that it takes about 3 hours to set up everything that they need for that piece. So
that's Birds on a Wire, wonderful new music ensemble at Western Michigan University, and it will be led by School of Music director David Colson. So if you're into seeing something brand new presented by wonderful artists this week, the concert is Thursday at 7:30 at Dalton Center Recital Hall.
And it's free.
And it's free. I thought there would be a ticket price for this.
So did I, but there's not.
Free and open to the public. Well, that's great. Thank you so much, Carl. Any last thoughts on this?
I just want to say that it's just an honor to work on this piece and to get a chance to express these sentiments and deal with these issues, which you don't, you know, as a white guy, I don't that often get a chance to deal with. But the poems are really for everyone, I think.